Our Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Stacy Lynn. Tomorrow will be day four for United Auto Workers to be out on the picket line demanding higher pay and...
As the industry shifts towards electric vehicles, workers want a bigger role in the manufacturing and more job security. Union President Sean Fain says the auto executives are out of touch with their blue-collar workers.
Labor costs are about 5% of the cost of the vehicle. They could double our wages and not raise the price of the vehicles and still make billions in profits. It's a choice.
CBS's Skylar Henry tells us contract talks will resume tomorrow when the union's expected to meet with Stellantis. Clock is ticking for the possibility of a federal government shutdown at the end of the month. But when Ohio Republican Representative Mike Turner was asked about it on Face the Nation today.
Do I hear you saying no government shutdown?
I didn't say that. I said we're going to pass a spending bill. We'll just have to see when.
So what will we... Okay.
Well, stay tuned.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said he wants to avoid a shutdown, but he lacks the votes to pass a stopgap bill to keep the government open past September 30th. So what does former President Trump think about it? He told NBC's Meet the Press.
Oh, I think if they don't get a fair deal, we have to save our country. We have $35 trillion in debt. We have to save our country.
So you would shut down the government? You'd support that?
I'd shut down the government if they can't make an appropriate deal. Absolutely.
A manhunt's underway for the person responsible for an ambush-style shooting of an L.A. County Sheriff's deputy. Ryan Klickenbrumer was found slumped over the wheel of his patrol car.
The Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department homicide investigators are investigating the murder of our deputy. Detectives are in the initial stages of this investigation and seeking the public's assistance to apprehend this suspect.
Sheriff Robert Luna says the deputy had just left the station in uniform when it happened. Help for those devastated by the flooding in eastern Libya has been slow to arrive. BBC News correspondent Anna Foster is in Derna.
International aid is starting to arrive now. We've just been to a new French field hospital. The Italian Navy are delivering boxes of supplies. But here on this street corner, you see locals doing what they can. And instead of the mud and grime, it is boxes and boxes of colorful clothes that have been donated.
Two pilots are dead after a crash involving two planes at the Reno Air Races this afternoon. It happened right at the end of the T6 Gold Race. The planes collided while landing. No one else on the ground was injured, but again, both pilots died in the crash. This is CBS News.
When you think of hiring, think of Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
At Boot Barn, we're driven by everything the cowboy boot stands for. The reliable communities of the West, the hardened values of the cowboy, and the unshakable spirit of all who lead a tenacious lifestyle. Justin boots capture these Western ideals in every pair. Their handcrafted boots are an invitation into the continuing story of the West, open to all who dream of untamed lands and endless Western skies. Justin boots at Boot Barn.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Do you need new wiper blades but aren't sure which ones are right for you? The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts can help. We'll show you the best options for your specific vehicle and even install your new wipers for free. And right now, save $10 per pair on Bosch Focus wiper blades, plus get 2x O Rewards points. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Saddle up, buckaroos. It's time to start the cattle drive with Trail Tunes, the new cowboy, western, and south of the border show on Wiscountry 105.5 WIRI. Every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m., join me, Gene, Roy, Tex, and Rex with songs of lonesome cowboys, wicked rustlers, and sighing senoritas. From the sons of the pioneers to riders in the sky, Trail Tunes will have you wishing for those wide open spaces. Every Thursday from 7 to 8, only on Wiscountry 105.5.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Lows level off around 43. Tonight, under mainly clear skies, northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Daytime highs approaching 72. Tomorrow, mainly clear skies. Mainly cloudy skies. Tomorrow night, lows around 51. Chance for scattered showers Tuesday and Wednesday. Low 70s. Tuesday, low 80s by Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 64.
Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Director's Cut for this September 17th, session 37. That's right, we're keeping track. Your host and program director here, James J. Maloff, with my partner in art, our head of production, Seth Habacker.
Yes, we are finally, after this long, we're finally keeping track. We know what we're trying to do, right?
Didn't take us that long.
It didn't take us that long.
A couple, 37.
Thanks for joining us tonight, everyone. Really appreciate being here, and we've got an old friend of sorts here tonight.
Yeah, we asked the best listeners in radio to welcome to the WFHR stage a fantastic playwright, one of my favorite and best directors that I've worked with, the new executive director of Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater, Gretchen Powers.
Hello.
Hey, Gretch. How you doing?
I'm good.
Good, good. Good to hear. Good to hear that you're doing well, and thanks a lot for being here. We know how crazy busy you are, so we're going to have you for 5 minutes, and then we'll let you go.
wow, what are we going to fill the rest of the hour with?
It's all my one-man show. It's all. Let's start from the beginning, if you don't mind, Gretchen. What was the weather like the day you were born?
Well, it was October 7th morning. Actually, I was born in a hallway, so it was a very interesting day. So it's let me start back on October 5th.
I had a bet in my head that you would play along, and God, you came right through for me. Maybe we rewound too far. Maybe let's start with how about your first interaction with Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater? Because that's what we're going to do today. Is kind of, I thought your story is fantastic to begin with, let alone now with the new position you have. So I'd like to spend some time on that, and then spend the rest of the time previewing the new season.
Sounds good. So my very first performance with the Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater, there was stuff with children's theater from age 7 and onward, but I don't know if it was through the Arts Council or through Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater. It's kind of hard to like figure out what I was a part of. Mm-hmm. But my very first main stage performance with WRCT was in Diary of Anne Frank in 2004. Mm-hmm. So I was just a wee teenager, and I played Anne. It was a very hard role. Wow. A lot of monologues and, you know, some pretty deep stuff. I had my very first kiss was on stage with an actor, so it didn't mean anything, but I grew up on the stage. I grew up in front of all sorts of people, and it was always interesting because they never really stopped seeing me as a teenager for the longest time. It took until I joined the board and kind of got involved with everything that they realized I was in my 30s, so.
All time. That brings me to something I was going to get to a little later, but let's touch on it now. So with that, did you find, whether it was your first directed play in It's a Wonderful Life, or was it joining the board that you finally feel like you started to be heard?
Well, I was already on the board by the time I directed It's a Wonderful Life for a little while, and I feel like I always had my supports, and I have a million of them. There are so many people on the board and not in just part of the theater that have my back in so many ways, but I feel like I gained a lot of respect during It's a Wonderful Life as a director, just because it was juggling a large cast, a complex show, a Christmas show, busy schedules, and, actors who had a lot going on in their lives and who had to, drop out of the show with 2.5 weeks left, and then finding some guy to coming off the street to fill that role.
Sounds fascinating. I'd love to hear more about it sometime. That's an inside joke. I was in It's a Wonderful Life. I'm saying that like
he's
every
the guy.
Listener is
he's the
know.
Guy.
Yeah. Most listeners probably know by now, but still, you
possibly,
should do it.
Possibly,
you should
do it. With that, we've talked about the Anne Frank role a bit, you and I off air and stuff. And one of the things that I remember you talking about with that was how important it was for you at an early age to nail it. I think most actors, the three of us here, have all been on stage many times, and we all want to give everything we got and leave it all on the stage. But the way you talked about it, and especially from a young age, if I feel like, for lack of a better way of putting it, you got it.
I really hope I did. I wish I could kind of, I wish there was a time machine where I could just view things and see if I actually did. Because when you're 14 years old and you think you nail something, and when you're 35, it kind of like, there's a big difference. Oh, yeah. And so I actually read the script just a couple of weeks ago because I'm like, I missed this. And I wanted to, I'm like, did I do it that way? I hope I didn't do it that way. And I mean, I've never heard anybody tell me, say, like, oh man, you were terrible. But I feel like I embodied the character pretty well. Mm-hmm. And I had real tears most nights at, you know, the age of 14. And I feel like I was able to tell her story so that it could live forever in people's minds.
You found, it sounds like you found at a young age a way to tap into something.
I feel like I did. I feel like I was already kind of a grown up by the time I was a teenager.
Old soul.
And I feel like I felt things that other people didn't feel. And it made things like that very easy for me. I don't know. I feel like I becoming someone else on the stage was my escape from a lot of the stuff that was going on in my life. You know, my childhood was not terrible, but my teenage years were hard. Mm-hmm. And I remember being very sad and anxious and depressed. But the one time I felt like I was myself and okay and who I was okay was when I was on the stage. So even when I was becoming someone else, I don't know.
Do you think over the years you've found that confidence that you have on stage has bled into your own personal life?
I think so. I feel like it has helped me just put my big girl pants on and just do the hard things, because that's kind of what life, you know, is like. When, especially in my previous career before I was the executive director of the community theater, I was a social worker for 9 years. And I had to do a lot of really hard stuff and have a lot of really hard conversations. And sometimes I would, you know, psych myself out and not want to go and have these hard conversations. And then I just remember, this is your role. This is your job. You have to do it. And kind of think of it like acting. You have your script in your head of what would the person who actually was confident do.
Right on.
I'm not sure where on the timeline this falls between Anne Frank and Ho-Po, but take us through the steps of how Ho-Po came to be and actually getting it into being a thing.
So I know that my very first show that I ever did was Cinderella when I was 7 years old, and that was through Prairie Fire Children's Theater. And so this was something that I believe the Arts Council and the library would fund every year, where a traveling group from Minnesota would come and they'd put on a show in a week. You'd audition on Monday, you'd be performing by Friday. Cool. And they were big chaotic casts, and I think they still are around. I think that they're more geared to like homeschooled programs.
Yeah, I've heard a little of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But when I was just my senior year in high school was the last year that they came, I think, or the year after. And my friend Stephanie, who was a big director in children's theater, Stephanie Hirth, she and I were like, wow, that really stinks that they're not coming anymore. And what are the kids going to do? Because they would always do our 6-week program at WRCT, and then they would go and do Prairie Fire. It's just like the things that the theater kids always looked forward to. And so we talked to Ellen, who was the ED at the time, and she was like, yeah, you guys want to do this? Go ahead. And we both were the directors the very first year, and we played like the two adult characters. Like, we were doing Looking Glass Land, and I was the Red Queen, Stephanie was the White Queen, and then all these 50 some children would were all the other parts.
Right.
And it was a lot of fun, and with schedules and life we kind of took turns doing it for a while. And then I mean my life really took over. I had two kids and a job that was demanding, and so she did it for many years on her own. And actually this year was the very first year we let a different person direct the Ho-Po show, which kind of growing up and graduating out of our legacy and letting someone else. Yeah. He actually was an 8-year-old the very first year we did it.
Oh.
And so I will always remember him as Ryan, the kid that came up to me and said, "Hi, I'm Ryan, and I'm allergic to peanuts." And then I was like, "You're going to be my problem child."
Yep.
But he was, you know, he grew up with Ho-Po, and he went on to be a director for them one year.
Nice.
Day, so, yeah.
The again, one of those things that I think not only you and I, but Seth and I, and really just whenever we're talking about WRCT and summer season hits, and we're talking HOPO, where we're talking about it, how great it is to have that ability and something like that for kids in this area. How much we would have killed to have something like that when we were growing up, and I cannot imagine how much less trouble I would have gotten in. When it came to like presenting that, this idea of HOPO, was it to Ellen? Was it to the board?
And it was to Ellen and then to the board. I think okay. I had to do, we kind of, Ellen was a person I could talk to about anything. She was kind of like another aunt, you know?
Yeah, I could see that.
I'd ride by my, you know, go down to the theater, ride my bike over there and sit and have lunch in her office and be like, oh, these are my boy problems. Mm-hmm. These are, and then I was like, what can I do to make the children's theater better? And, you know, she kind of just bounced a lot of ideas off mm-hmm. of her. And she always, you know, trusted me and told me to go with my gut. And mm-hmm. very wonderful woman. And she kind of was just very much for it. She mm-hmm. wanted to see it be successful. So she helped us bring it to the board. I had all my ducks in a row for once and gave a decent presentation. And they approved it. So, yeah.
Right on. I think it's always interesting to hear behind the curtain and see what's going on and how these things develop. And especially with it being around so long, I think some people, especially if you're new to the area or if you're a younger person joining HOPO, you might think this has always been there. Always like to not only give credit to you and Steph, but to the other people that made it help make it happen, like Ellen and the board and the people at that time that saw, well, this could be beneficial to our area. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's the model of sports. It is, you know, the AAA or the minor leagues or the college football ranks, and then you move up to the pros with WRCT. It's such a smart thing to do too for your community, where you're getting these kids, like you mentioned, last season's director for HOPO, whether it was intended or not, he's going through the system learning. And mm-hmm. so you have a talent that you have created, that you have helped create or help embody and gave a perfect petri dish to, and then you helped flourish. It only helps whatever they go on and do. It not only helps HOPO, WRCT, and promotion-wise and everything, but it puts back into this community, puts back into the creative world. I don't know if you two saw that when you were first coming up with this, but what does it feel like to look at that legacy and to know that that's happening every season?
It makes me feel good. I don't know. I'm pretty sure. Well, Stephanie, she's awesome. And yeah. like whenever she basically is better at it than I am. Like, I'm just going to say that. Like, she's already picking out her show for next year because she's going to be the director. And she's, you know, toying with the idea of which kid she's going to ask to be her assistant, and has a lot of really good contenders. And, you know, she's letting the passion of the program live on. And it's really exciting to know how excited some of these kids get, especially even if it's their first year, second year, or whether they've been doing it since they were real little. And what's the HOPO play going to be? And it's always, it's just when I hear the word, I'm like, oh, that's me.
We'll have to, we're looking forward to having Steph and the HOPO cast for next season join us and everything on Director's Cut. We love having these guys on and all the casts on and everything. We touched on this a little bit. Your first directorial debut. It's a Wonderful Life. Why you chose that one? No, I'm joking. It's just such a massive. It's a big play, mm-hmm. and I remember hearing even at the time before that I was thinking of auditioning that you were doing it, and it was part of the reason I was thinking of it. I have no real interest in Christmas shows, but you directing intrigued me, and I thought about going out for it. Wasn't able to. You touched on the situation with that a little bit. You lose your lead actor. You reach out to me, and I join about a week or two left before going on.
Yeah.
I bring all this up because I'm curious to know that having that happen, and you've directed since, and that isn't the first curveball you've been throwing in theater, I'm sure. How do you feel that those experiences, your acting experiences, are going to help you in this new position?
I feel like it, like that specific experience with It's a Wonderful Life made me know that life is never guaranteed. Like things that are in your plans are not, you're going to get thrown curveballs. You're going to get someone who drops out of the last minute. You're going to have plans that change. Your kid's going to call in sick from school and you're going to have to stay home. Like you have to learn to adapt and kind of roll with things. And every day it's just, nothing is ever gonna stay the same, and so you have to be ready and willing to accept the fact that change is gonna happen. And you know, it I work well pretty well under stress. I feel that, like, even some of my best performances were when really traumatic things happened in my life. I had a friend who passed away on the night of one of my performances, and I did not take it well. And so they're like, do you want to not do the show? And I was like, no, I have to do the show. And it was one of my best performances I ever gave. And or like even my daughter and I were in a play for Mardi Gras a few years ago, a Shakespeare show nonetheless. And my daughter was just like an extra, didn't have any parts, and she gets a fever during the show. I'm on the stage, and they come up and they're like, hey, just let you know, she's laying down in the costume room and she's really sick right now. I'm like, oh great. So I did one more scene to go. I wasn't gonna stick around for curtain call, and I do the scene, and then the director, Kathy Miles, comes back and she's like, Gretchen, I just want to let you know that that was your best performance I've ever seen in your life. Go home and take care of your kid.
Like, wow.
But, you know, it's so I, in same with my jobs I've had in the past. I would have guardians very upset about, you know, Medicaid, because that's what I was dealing with, and calling me, yelling. And it's like, sometimes you just have to be composed no matter how much pressure you're under. And deal with the things that are come flying at you.
I think of my Nana. Her voice is in my head right now. You want to make God laugh, make plans.
Yeah.
It pops in my head.
That's like the social worker theme.
I'm glad you brought that up. I wasn't sure if I was going to ask this or not, because I don't want to be prying. But knowing each other a little bit off air and such, I know what that job meant to you, of being a social worker, and how it was more than a paycheck for you, how deep it hits you and everything, and the empathy of it. When I saw that you had the new position, I was genuinely a little surprised, because I knew what that previous job meant to you. Why take this chance and jump into this new position of the executive director of WRCT?
And that's what a lot of people have asked me, like, why the career change? And well, I'm going to say that it was just the right time. I'm not going to say anything bad about my previous employers. Mm-hmm. You know, my last supervisor was amazing at Inclusa.
We can do that when the mics are off. We can,
I'm joking.
But it's a tough world. Like, when you kind of realize that even helping people with disabilities and the elderly are, it's all driven by money, and the state controls that. And when you have to say no to something, and you realize you're not helping people the way you want to help people, and you're just making them feel sad because you have to deny coverage of something, it really ate at me. And I really was just kind of, I thought about it a lot, and I thought to myself, I've always wanted a career where I help people. Why can't I do that with the arts? Mm-hmm. And so I may not be actually helping people in the same way that I was, but I am helping them find entertainment or joy in a performance, or helping someone who has never done something like this before come in and be a volunteer and feel welcome. And so I do see it, even though it's not the helping profession, that I'm able to still do that. Yeah. I don't know.
Last question, as far as for this section, that we'll get into the new season and everything, but what are your hopes for the future of WRCT? If this goes smoothly, you could be doing this for decades going forward, similar to Ellen and that kind of thing. So what is it, whether it's a small picture or big picture, what are your hopes for WRCT?
I think I scared one of the board members on Sunday when I was helping out at the downtown affair, and they're like, well... I'm like, well, no, I plan on doing this for the rest of my life. And they're like, really? Like, what if you get burned out? And it's like, no, this is kind of where I want to see myself for the rest of my life. So, yeah, I'm hoping that it never feels stifled, where I don't want it to grow because it's been this way for so long. I want to watch it keep growing. I want to create a community theater where the whole community feels welcome, and that means in being all inclusive, whether or not it's making sure that everyone is eligible to be part of this. Like, it's not just you have, like, we don't just want to sell tickets. We want you to come be a part of the community theater. And even though you might not get cast in this play, there's another one that's coming, and hopefully there'll be a part for you. Doesn't matter what your race or your ethnicity or your social class is, like, come and be part of us. I kind of want to build a program for people with disabilities, just because that is kind of my forte.
Sure.
And I've been working with them since I was still in high school. I would love, there's a program that's kind of, I think it's in Marathon County, where the people with the disabilities are the actors, but then the helpers are the narrators. And so then, like, if they, they did Beauty and the Beast 1 year, and so they all got to get dressed up in costumes, and the narrators kind of narrated as people went on, whether or not they were in a wheelchair or had a cognitive disability, they were able to participate in some way. I think it'd be really cool to get,
That'd be beautiful.
I would love to do something like that, and I'd love to have them help out with building sets, even if they're just there to, like, help paint something, just so that they can have their name on, then they come and watch the show, and they're like, I helped build that shelf. Mm-hmm. And it's just knowing that this is their community, too.
Yeah. We are speaking with Gretchen Powers, new executive director for Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater. Her toughest question yet is still coming, but when we get back, we're gonna talk about the new season at WRCT here on Director's Cut.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
A tree can be a warrior, battling global challenges with greater courage. A tree can be a solution, cleaning our air, supporting our communities, and protecting our wildlife. A tree can be noble, growing hope in every corner of the world. That's why now is the time for trees. Millions of trees. Join our planting movement at arborday.org.
Welcome back to Director's Cut on WFHR, locally grown radio. Seth, James, and Gretchen with you. We are speaking about the Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater new season. I just saying that, I got goosebumps. It felt so good. I don't even know if I'm going to be in any of these shows, but it feels so good to talk about them. And exciting to have a new season to get into. There is one currently right now. The actors are rehearsing. They are going through setting up everything for Blythe Spirit. So what better place to start? Let's go with Noel Coward's Blythe Spirit, directed by the legend Linda Garsky. And I will stand on that legend.
She is a legend. In fact, there was a girl who was on Jeopardy last night that looked like Linda. And I was like, that's Linda. It's not Linda, but it looks like Linda.
With Blythe Spirit, this is a fun kind of, like, to me, a bit of a darker comedy. A bit of has a little bit of that to it. And it's, I think, a well-established play.
Oh, yeah. I guess that it's one of Noel Coward's best works, is what I've heard. From what I can see, well, I know that David Farnborough, who's the president of our board, he's playing the main character, and I guess that it's a show that he's been wanting to do since he was 12, and he's like a dream role for him, so I'm so excited for him.
Wow.
Yeah, so the whole cast is just awesome. Am I doing a summary right now?
I was going to let you take it wherever you wanted to. So we could give a summary of the show a little bit.
Yeah. So I haven't sat and watched much for rehearsals. I've gone in and taken pictures and stuff, but it's about a man who's being haunted by his deceased wife. Mm. And there's a lot of humor there, but a lot of snappy language and you know, plays on words and everything. I don't know if I'm supposed to give this away. I think it is. It's pretty much well advertised that his other wife dies also, and then he becomes haunted by both of them.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that's in the description.
It's an old play. I think there's a moratorium on spoiler alerts at some point. We're good. It's been around for a long time,
And we're going to be having the cast on with us in just a week or so on Midday Magazine, so we can get more in-depth in it. But I wanted to touch on it a little bit. With it being kind of the first show that you're kind of in the big seat at, I know that you don't have necessarily a hands-on a lot of with it, but
I will eventually. Next week I go in and I'm running sound for it. So, I mean, I'm jumping right in.
Yeah,
so,
you're right.
And I know that there's going to be a lot of special effects because, you know, there's ghosts. So
there's ghosts,
not only are they acting and very much going to be portrayed in really cool costumes and makeup, but there's also going to be a special effects person who makes a lot of our props and rigs up a bunch of things to make it so that it looks like a ghost is doing things. And it's really cool.
Love it.
Looking so forward to this one. Blythe Spirit, of course, is premiering in just a couple weeks, if my computer would work with me.
October 6th, 7th?
October 6th is what I was going to say. I just didn't want to say because I wasn't 100%. But yes, October 6th yep. is when it premieres. And again, we'll have the cast on with us shortly. Looking forward to talking with them more about the show. A Candle in the Window is the seasonal show this year. That's going to be directed by Deb Szyszynski. Deb, a lifetime friend of WRCT's and mm-hmm. one of two of my stage moms.
She's the sweetest woman on the
show. She is.
She may be the sweetest person ever. Yes. And that's a great thing to bring up, too, because I believe this is Deb's first directorial show.
It is. I guess she's directed with Church, like some skits and stuff. But this will be her first.
So she has done a little bit before.
But this is her first big project. Yeah. And I can already tell you that she's going to be a fantastic director. She came in for her pre-production meeting with me and the guy who builds all our sets. And she had blueprints and a perfectly drawn out set. And had all of her script marked up with all of her sound and light cues, and she was the passion in her eyes that you saw while she was talking about everything just made my heart smile so big.
Nice.
I witnessed her standing up for her own ideas, kind of like the set builder. Awesome, is he has got great ideas, but he suggested like doing something, and she's like, no, that's not really what I want. And just, I was like, whoa,
there you go.
Like,
that's a sign of a good director. Yes, know what you want. Yeah,
you gotta be able to stand up for yourself. Yeah.
And of course, I mean, and it's not like there was anything nefarious about it. The set builder was just giving ideas and stuff, and she just jumped in and was like, very specific, I want this kind of bench, not that kind of bench. And I was like, good for you, Deb.
Very cool.
But and I know that our builders will do an amazing job bringing her vision to life. And it's, I don't know if people don't really know the show. It's about being stranded in a train station on Christmas Eve. And it's, I believe that all the main characters have something kind of going on in their life, whether one's, you know, not such a nice husband and maybe they got a lesson to learn. And then I believe that the meaning of the Christmas spirit comes on and out through the show. So
it'd be a little weird if it ended the opposite way. But the Christmas spirit and all that.
The Christmas show is this.
You mentioned that you're on the board as well.
Not anymore.
Yes, yeah, that'd be a little bit of conflict. But it'd be interesting, I imagine. But when you were on the board, were you part of play selection?
Yep, I was on the play selection committee.
Why? What helped you guys decide on this one for a Christmas show?
Chris Williams, I believe, was the one who put it in. I'm not really sure why. We just kind of, people send in scripts and ideas all the time, and we talk about it, and then we talk about it, and then we talk about it, and then we make a decision, and kind of just the one that got chosen. I don't know that there were any other submissions for Christmas. Somebody had submitted It's a Wonderful Life, not knowing that we had done it 5 years ago.
Yeah,
but
yeah, right. And that brings up an interesting side conversation here of when to do a show again. You mentioned it was about 5 seasons ago with It's a Wonderful Life. Do you in your head kind of have an idea of that? Like you want to wait 10 years, 15 years, or just play it by ear?
It really depends on the following of the show or something. I've been around the theater for a very long time. So I've witnessed shows being redone, and I've also seen shows that were really awesome and thought, I want to do this again, and was told that maybe it's too soon, even though it's been 15 years. But like Escanaba and The Moonlight, we did that not even 10 years apart from each other, but it had such a big following, and it worked out so well the first time, and then it worked out extremely well the second time that we did it. And so I really think it just depends on the show and how big of an audience that they think they can bring in. But I think it'd be so fun to revisit some of the ones that we haven't done more than once within the last 20 years at least. So
I only brought this up because of Arsenic and Old Lace. That's my dream role. So that's the only reason I brought this up. No journalistic integrity whatsoever. I do find it curious, though, because I've never been on a board like that or anything, and I've never been a part of a play selection. So it does seem like one of those things where it'd be hard to gauge. And you really do have to be from the community, be a part of the community, I think, to kind of feel that, whether or not it's a good time or whether or not it's even topical or not.
Right. And it's some plays just don't age well. And I think that's something that we find out, that maybe the show just didn't do well, not just because of ticket sales tanking, but maybe realizing that the content just wasn't so great, especially to do nowadays. I think I've had some people from other theaters even reach out and say, hey, you should do this show. And I'm like, that'd be a really good show to do, but I just don't know if our community would take it real well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We ran into that at Stagecoach with And Then There Were None, which, of course, has the 10 little Indians in it, and that didn't go over well, and there were so many other little things that we had to change. It almost felt like when we got done, the script had all these, it looked like FBI pages or something, like there's all these blacked out spots and stuff, but it made memorization a little easier. That part was
Let's do a play with a blank stage and lights out, no words, see how that goes.
I'm up here not offending anyone. I'm here to not offend you.
This was such a good play.
But, you know, tying back to something you brought up earlier about inclusion and representation and that being important to you, and I think just being important in society going forward, it's good to hear that stuff. It's nice to know that that's something that's on your radar. Hopefully it doesn't have to come up too much, but if it does, you are ready for it.
I think it just should be a generalized, unspoken rule that it doesn't matter if you're black or white, Native American or Hmong. You're playing a role. Like, you can play that person as your race. You don't have to be that race to be that race. I don't know.
Yeah. I think so. We get you. Yeah.
Like, it was asked during my interview, like, what are you going to do to make that happen? I'm like, just be good people so that they know that they feel comfortable. I don't know.
I think you're dead on with. I don't think that you have to. I think sometimes, especially with a subject like that, we think that we need to reinvent the wheel when really you just got to open your heart and your mind. It isn't a whole lot more than that. And the answers answer themselves. A Candle in the Window premieres December 8th. Be sure to get your tickets for that. More on that in just a little bit. Want to keep the conversation going, and actually I'm going to let my partner in art over here take over for the Glass Menagerie.
I think some people know by now, we might have talked about it a little bit, I'm going to be directing Glass Menagerie.
Oh, that's right, you are.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I was just handing it off to you because you hadn't talked in a while. I didn't even think, what a coincidence.
Oh, okay.
It's really cool. I'm sorry.
Oh man, working with this guy. Anyway, I wanted to. I found out I've been kind of interested in doing a show for a little while now. When I was trying to think, what's a good show for me to do? Well, I saw that coming up this year, the Glass Menagerie was one of the shows that they were going to do, and I was like, you know what? I have been a part of a production of Glass Menagerie. I played Tom, and it was first of all my most favorite role I've ever done. Yeah. I love playing Tom because it's Tennessee Williams, and he's a marvelous writer, of course. We know this. And just the character and the setting, it's just an amazing show. But it wasn't just that. The director that we had, the producer and the director, she wanted to do it differently. So she did a multimedia version, meaning that it included film and audio. We had, you know, silhouette or shrimp. I always get that word wrong. Scrim. Thank you. Yeah. Scrim. That's the word I was looking for. Kind of thing with the same screen that we used for the film, and but also with live action parts, of course. It was a fabulous show. It was so much fun to be a part of, and sadly, no one came to see it. It was very disappointing. And so I saw this, and the first thing that jumped into my head was, I want to do that show, and I want to do it the way she did it, because I thought it was so cool. It turned out so nice, so awesome, and I want people to see it. Yeah. And I know here we got a chance.
Yeah.
That there's going to be people that really want to see this. So I did my proposal and I put it in to say, you know, this is how I would do it. And they thankfully they chose me, and I'm very excited about that. So I'm just starting in the first stages now of getting ready, talking to Jill, who was the one from before. It's been 10 years. I'm like, Jill, do you have anything left? Do you have anything on this? Because I really need it.
Yeah.
No. But, I mean, I have a good memory of what's going on. But at this point, it's going to be a little of a challenge because of the technical things that we have to do, syncing up sound and video and working around the screen and all these things. But, man, it's a challenge, and I'm super excited to be able to take that on.
Are you looking to do to use some modern terms here, a remake or a reimagining? Are you looking to do exactly what she did, or kind of do what she did but put your own fingerprints on it?
Oh, for sure. I want to. It'll have its my stuff in there, if you want to put it that way.
I do.
For sure. For sure. I think I can't recreate it completely, of course. But for the setup is great, and I think the foundation she put under it with how she did it is a great way to start. And so we'll work from there. And not only that, I mean, it's going to be, I think it'll be fun because I want to include, you know, Wisconsin Rapids community media, because mm-hmm. to help us do the film those parts, that sort of thing. And of course, we know how to record stuff, you know. Well, we have familiar. Kind of a thing. I'm familiar with that.
It's
right
kind
here.
Of our wheelhouse.
Right, right. But I'm super excited. And I should say that's all the technical stuff. It'll be, I have directed actors before. It was in radio plays, you know, a staged radio play. So I've done some directing of actors, but this will be the first time for an actual stage type show. Yeah. And which is nice because Glass Menagerie is only four people in the cast. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll help me get my feet wet without having a giant cast. You know, I'm not like Gretchen here who decided yeah. to just like jump yes, in with yes. both feet. You know, I'm not quite as brave as she is,
yeah,
but
maybe. Gretchen, with the multimedia kind of idea for this show, I know that we even in our pregame we're touching on this a little bit. Is that something that you could see WRCT doing more of in the future?
I think that if it works, for sure. Yeah, yeah. And I think that it's just having directors who are willing to try mm-hmm. it, and I think that's awesome that you're doing that, because people don't like to see different things when they come in.
Yeah. Right, especially when it's a show that's well known as the Glass Menagerie, and because it's like, well, what can you do a little different with this? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, it's a great show. We love yeah. the script is awesome, but what can we do to, you know, change it? Like you, James was alluding to, you know, how can we make it a little more different? How can yeah. we update it maybe a little mm-hmm. bit? So that's what I'm looking to do.
This was a show we did, not we, I would mean... before me like literally one of the right. first years that the theater existed.
Yeah.
They did it, and mm-hmm. I've seen pictures from it, and it looked cool.
I think it was the one that Miss Johanna
yeah
was. It was uh-huh. yeah, and there's yep. that picture of her, and my goodness, that's
she's
just
so beautiful.
Oh, it's a great picture. Yeah. I talked to her when she was in on Director's Cut with us once, and I mentioned it. It's the only time, she was a teacher of mine, only time I've ever seen her a little red, not completely but a little bit almost got her, almost did. But let's just quickly, and it doesn't have to be quickly, I'm sorry. Let's give you a little bit of a synopsis of the Glass Menagerie for those that may not know it.
Sure. It takes place between the wars, World War One and World War Two, 1930s. And I can't remember exactly where it is in the South, probably in the Missouri or Tennessee, probably where Tennessee Williams was from, yeah, somewhere in the South. And I can't remember off the top of my head. But basically, it's about a family, Tom, his mother, and his sister, who is kind of an invalid, doesn't get out very much. She's very shy. But she collects glass animals, the menagerie of the title. That is what she does. The mother is very keen on getting her married off to someone. Doesn't matter who it is, really. Just get her out of the house kind of thing. And the mom is also stuck in the past. She's thinking about her childhood. There's a famous speech about, you know, the cotillion that she went to when she, and the dress that she wore. And she's very, you know, kind of dreamy about it. Tom, the son, wants to get out. He wants to get out more than anything. He meets up with a young gentleman called the Gentleman Caller, Jim, I believe is his name, and a friend of his who they invite over to dinner with the idea of maybe he'll fall in love with the daughter and take her away and sweep her off her feet kind of thing. So basically, it takes place, you know, over the course of just a couple of days. But it does a great job of setting the time period, of setting the scene, of, you know, that Southern feel to it. It really does. And it has one of the most heartrending, like, I'm really teasing it here, devastating endings that any play has ever had. It's very dramatic, and it's actually absolutely amazing. So for those who don't know, that's kind of a very you know, broad description of what it is. But you come not just for that. You come for Tennessee Williams' dialogue. Mm-hmm. His, you know, there's lots of, you know, long monologues in it that are just beautifully written, and some really great characterizations of the four different people. And that's basically why you come to see a Tennessee Williams play.
Yeah. I want to see like Missouri, St. Louis, something like that.
I think
that.
It is St. Louis. I think
I
you're right.
I remember
yeah.
that coming up, and I've been obviously looking at the script yeah, a little right. bit lately, so I'm a little familiar. But I think that's right. I think that it's
I think
in that
you're right,
area.
Yeah.
Cannot wait. The Glass Menagerie will premiere March 1st.
Nice.
We have one more show to discuss. Let us get to that as my computer once again decides to mess with me. I appreciate that, computer. Thank you so much for it. Thank you. Rumors is where we want to go next, where the season wraps up, the famous Neil Simon play. I don't even think that we need to get too in-depth on this one as far as the synopsis of the show.
I'm not even 100% sure on the synopsis just because I've been focusing so much on like listening to all the ones about the other ones. Yeah. But I can tell you that the director is another brand new director, and she has been in so much just to sit and, like, we've ordered some little set props for her already for her scenery, and I've a lot of people who are coming out for shows are like, well, Rumors is the one I'm going to go out for.
Yeah,
so,
I've heard that a lot,
so
too.
It's a popular one, so, and I think it's going to be a good one.
Christine Sullivan will be the director for that one, and it is her first show, and you've got two first-time, or well, two technically first-time directors, Seth's first-time directing here, but with that, how do you, because there's only so much you can do, certainly, but how do you feel like you can be supportive throughout that process, being there, having been in those shoes?
And that's part of my job, and it's just making sure that they have what they need, whether or not it's, do you have the right people to help you? Do you have the right tools to build the set that you want? Do you have the right emotional support? Like, I literally encourage any director to come in and cry to me if they're having a bad day or they can't figure something out. I want to be that person for them. Like, tomorrow morning, I'm going all the way to Conover, Wisconsin to pick up a rug because we found one on Facebook Marketplace for $40. And it's like, oh, well, somebody's got to do it. I guess that's going to be me. But, like, we need... I want to be that person. Like, I'm not going to just shove it off on somebody else. I want to be able to help them get what they need to feel successful. Because it's not just about me. It's not just about ticket sales. It's about putting on quality theater, but also having them come back and do it again someday. Because I don't want them to be like, I am never directing at WRCT ever again. Because that was stressful. It's going to be stressful. It's kind of directing. But if you have me and your other team to help you, I hope that you feel comfortable being stressed.
Well said. Well said.
Real quick, I can give you a little bit about Rumors. That is, in fact, the show that my wife and I met each other on. Aww. We were in Rumors together way back in the day. It's basically a show about a party at a place where the host is missing. And that's basically the premise. And with Neil Simon, you know, there's going to be lots of fighting, lots of really great dialogue, funny. It's a hilariously funny show, too, by the way. And it's pretty farcical, too. It gets kind of crazy at the end. But it's a fun one.
Neil Simon's almost the Jerry Bruckheimer of like playwrights. Like he just loves like fighting and explosions and things like that. Like it is a fun show, too. What a great way to wrap up the season. It's one of those ones that not only with its with the play itself, Rumors having such a good standing, but the playwright being so. Even if you don't know the play, you know Neil Simon.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't know Neil Simon, you know the play. Mm-hmm. You're going to be bringing people in, and you love to be able to do that and wrap up a season that way. Throughout the season, I imagine that there are going to be other things. We have Halloween coming up and some other stuff too that you're hopeful for to maybe have some things for. Do you have anything in mind? Or do you have anything you want to tease, or just be on the lookout, everybody?
So be on the lookout. I know that there is going to be a Silver Foxes show on October 26th and 27th. They are going to be doing a bunch of skits, and I think they're geared more towards the Halloween theme. Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
There's a pumpkin on the flyer, so I hope so. We aren't doing our we did the Halloween dance party last Halloween, and it's just not the right time for that.
Yeah.
I just got into my role, and I'm not going to say it didn't do that great last year, because it didn't. It was a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
But right now we got to focus on some other things, and currently I am planning a fundraiser slash event for Christmas. I actually got some funding from Solaris approved, and
right,
we're going to be doing a Christmas cookies with Santa event.
Awesome.
We're teetering between two dates, and it's still in the works. I'm not advertising it just yet, but where it'll give the kids an opportunity to do a photo shoot with Santa, because we don't have them all anymore, so
That's right.
Kind of important to get
excellent
that
idea
for the kids. Also, we will have like little cookie decorating stations so that they can decorate a sugar cookie and have a snack with their parents and have
so
a
cool.
good time. So
Rumors will be premiering on May 3rd, and it'll be the final main stage show of the 2023 season. I did want to mention real quick that right now, you can buy 2023-2024 season tickets and save 30% off. You can go to wrctheater.org, wrctheater.org right now to do that.
Or you can come in and see me.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you should definitely stop by. Yeah, you should exactly. definitely yeah. stop by our, and see Grudge.
Our box office hours are Tuesday through Friday, 10 to 2. And I'm always happy to give you a tour of the theater or just sit and talk for a little bit or try to gauge your opinion on being involved or something like that, or if you just want to buy tickets.
Nice.
Awesome.
That's awesome. So we're going to take our final break here. We'll come back and we'll wrap it up with Gretchen Powers on Director's Cut.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows around 43. Tonight, under partly cloudy skies, northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Daytime highs approaching 72. Tomorrow, sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Mainly cloudy. Tomorrow night, lows around 51. Chance for scattered showers Tuesday and Wednesday, 72. Tuesday, 81. Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 56.
Welcome back to Director's Cut, everyone. Seth and James here. We're speaking with our good friend Gretchen Powers, new executive director, Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater. We're wrapping up, and I just have a couple quick questions for you, Gretch. One, I like to ask all of our like artist friends a couple of kind of broad questions, and one of them I like to ask is about playing a venue, like a dream venue. For me, last week Pete Revelle and I were talking. We actually had the same one, the Chicago Theater. It's that one of our both him and I's dreams and such. But there's like Red Rocks, there's Madison Square Garden, there's Broadway, there's all kinds of places. Is there any place you've ever dreamed of performing?
I always wanted to perform out in New York somewhere. I always thought that would be really cool. But to be honest, I'm tired and I don't plan on going anywhere anytime soon.
Might have been a bad time to ask.
Honestly, Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater venue should be the dream venue for local artists. Right on. Just because it is a beautiful theater and it we're lucky. We're probably one of the only community theaters in the nation that has their own venue, that has their own space where you can put your walls up for your show within the first week of your performances, and it's something to be envied. And it is a beautiful theater, and they're constantly making updates to make it nicer. So yeah, I know that wasn't the direction you were hoping
No, I was great. It was great.
But I've been to a lot of beautiful theaters. There's one in Minneapolis. I don't remember the name of it, but it was a beautiful facility with a really cool ceiling.
There's four really nice ones in Minneapolis in that area. There, I know what you're talking about.
I've been there.
Right. That was great. There are no bad answers.
No.
When it comes to advice, whether we're talking as an actor, as a director, just as a human being, what is some of the best advice you've been given for what you're doing now, for this next stage in your life, this next chapter?
I would say that the best advice I've been given is to follow your heart. If the goal in my life is happiness at this point, I'm too old to kind of be thinking, like, how can I make other people feel happy or make them like me? And going forward, it's all about choosing happiness. Mm-hmm. And if you're wanting to do a role and you really want it, you prepare for it. You do the research, you put the work into it, and if it manifests itself to happen, then it happens. If it doesn't, then you move on and find another way to find happiness. Same thing, if you want a vision for a show to go a certain way, you make it that way, and you go with decisions where your heart feels like it's in it.
I will be the next James Bond. I will be the next James Bond. I will. Sorry, was that on air? Was that?
I'll fix it in post.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm embarrassed by that. One of the things that I think you touched on there that I really think we can all take to heart is having an open heart and being open to not only new situations, but to being open to happiness. I think one of the things that is toughest for a lot of us, and this is all across the gamut, young, old, man, woman, cat, dog, doesn't matter. We have a hard time allowing ourselves to be happy. Like, it seems so silly to say out loud. I feel ridiculous saying that, but it's true. We really have this hesitancy to not only be our own worst enemy, but to so quickly look at the negative or so quickly be cynical or something. The more that we can tell ourselves things like that, Gretch, I believe we're rewiring. We're rewiring that brain. And we're hopefully not only doing that for ourselves, but for our kids and the people that are around taking that stuff in. So I think that's really helpful and can apply to no matter what field somebody's doing out there. I'm curious too about one other thing, but we'll have to talk about that another time. We only have enough time for one more question, and this is the toughest question you're going to be asked in the whole interview. If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why?
Oh, goodness gracious.
Yes, yes. You can thank James Lipton for this, by the way.
James Lipton.
Lipton!
If you were a polymer, what kind of polymer would you be?
Oh.
I didn't know you had a Lipton impression in there. Oh, that was good.
I don't like to just throw it out there anytime, you know.
I feel like my decision would change every week, so I'd have to have lots of coffee.
Oh, shucks. Dang it.
Actually, my son told me that, Mom, do you know what I want to be when I grow up? I want to be a teacher, and it's so I can bring coffee to school with me. I'm like, that is the weirdest reason to be a teacher, but okay.
I love it. I love it.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. It's a tough one, I told you.
But we get a lot of reactions like that when we ask this question. It's kind of funny.
I don't know why my last question is to anger the interviewer with me.
I'm never coming back here.
Yeah, lasting impression is just being mad at me.
I think I would have coffee with Alexander Hamilton's wife.
Oh.
Why can't I think of her first name?
Oh, wow. Oh, I can't either. Oh,
Eliza. Nope.
Yeah. No, Eliza. It's Eliza.
It's Eliza. It is Eliza. You're right, yes.
Yep.
And I'm sure the musical was not historically accurate, but I'm pretty sure that she's done a lot of work for women, and I think that she'd be great.
So. That'd be cool.
Yeah, and I think there was enough accuracies there for that to be.
Her part of the story, there were.
Yes, yeah. And such a great answer. Wow, that's a great answer. We've had a couple of really good ones lately.
That's an excellent one.
That's one of the better ones we've gotten.
I went completely white, so I couldn't think of an answer. So I'm glad that I pulled that one
happens,
out there.
Yeah.
So
that's the way this works usually to people. When it comes to having coffee with her or something, why do you think her name came to mind right away?
I just think that she probably endured a lot as a woman that we don't know all the parts about it. And I'd like to kind of know her story, whether or not it's just, you know, politically or historically, but also emotionally. I'm kind of curious as to what she went through as a wife, you know, as a woman, you know, losing her son, dealing with infidelity, you know, it's just very, but also the being the public face of a person who did a lot of change for the country.
Wow.
So
excellent.
A great conversation as always with you, Gretchen. Thank you so much for joining us. A big thank you to Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater's own Gretchen Powers for joining us. Blythe Spirit is premiering October 6th. Make sure to get your tickets for it and be on the lookout. And you can find out more information at wrctheater.org. Be sure to bookmark that page, wrctheater.org, and follow along with WRCT on social media, wherever you Instagram talks, your face grams. I don't know. Wherever they are, go ahead.
Wherever they are.
Be sure to follow along with everything that they have going on. And, of course, you can catch more of our podcast here, A Director's Cut, at civicmedia.us. Again, Gretchen, thank you for the time.
Thank you.
After I deployed for the first time to Afghanistan in 2003, at 4 a.m, my phone rang. They said, I regret to inform you that your husband was wounded in action. Victor sustained a moderate traumatic brain injury. I was doing school full time, and I was also then caring for Victor. One of the most important elements of caregiving is taking care of yourself. I just didn't want to forget that I also had goals and that I also had a life. What I did is I challenged Victor to meet me halfway. There are almost 6 million military and veteran caregivers across the nation. We have our own journey, and we can fulfill that journey at the same time that we are helping our loved one.
Visit aarp.org/caregiving for a free military veteran's guide to navigate your caregiving journey and better care for your loved one and yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Sports allow us to play, learn, and grow. But there's something more important than victory. At the U.S. Center for Safe Sport, we believe every athlete deserves to be safe. Safe from abuse and misconduct on and off the field. We equip athletes, parents, coaches, and others with the right education to recognize, prevent, and respond to harmful behavior. Join the movement to champion respect and end abuse at uscenterforsafesport.org.
The Morning Show on WFHR. It's different.
You can choose your mood. You can choose
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at